rich and confident, lubricated for all his life with the finest of wines and the fattest of cuts, is indulgent, but the sharp little gaze is interrogating me. I force myself to meet his gimlet eyes, hooded under his fat eyelids. He doesn't raise me from nothing. I don't come from nowhere. I was born a Parr of Kendal. My late husband was a Neville. These are great families in the north of England. I need a little time, I bargain, to accustom myself to joy. He makes a little gesture with his pudgy hand to say that I can take all the time I like. I curtsy and walk backwards from the table where we were playing at cards, when he suddenly demanded the greatest stake that a woman can wager, a gamble with her life. It is against the law to turn a back to him. Some people secretly joke that it is safer to keep an eye on him. 6 paces backwards, down the long gallery, the spring sunshine beating through the tall windows onto my modestly bowed head, and then I curtsy again, lowering my eyes. When I come up, he is still smiling at me, and everyone is still watching. I make myself smile and step backwards to the closed doors that lead to his presence chamber. Behind me, the guards swing them open for me to pass. I hear the murmur as the people outside, excluded from the honour of the royal presence, see me curtsy again on the threshold, the great king watching me leave. I continue backwards as the guards close the double doors to hide me from his sight, and I hear the thud as they ground their halberds. I stand for a moment, facing the carved wooden panels, quite unable to turn and face the curious stares in the crowded room. Now the thick doors are between us. I find I am shaking, not just my hands, not just trembling in my knees, but shuddering in every sinew of my body as if I have a fever, shivering like a leveret tucked down in a wheat field, hearing the swish of the blades of the reaping gang coming closer and closer. It is long past midnight, before everyone is quiet and asleep, and I put a blue cloak over my night robe of black satin, and dark as a shadow in the colours of the night sky, go quietly out of the women's rooms and down the great stairs. No one sees me pass. I have the hood pulled over my face, and anyway this is a court that has bought and sold love for years. No one has much curiosity in a woman going to the wrong room after midnight. There are no sentries posted at my lover's door. It is unlocked, as he promised. I turn the handle and slip in, and he is there, waiting for me at the fireside, the room empty, lit only by a few candles. He is tall and lean, dark-haired, dark-eyed. When he hears me, he turns, and desire illuminates his grave face. He grabs me, my head against his hard chest, his arms tightening around my back. Without saying a word, I am rubbing my forehead against him as if I would drive myself under his skin into his very body. We sway together for a moment, our bodies craving the scent, the touch of the other. His hands clutch at my buttocks. He lifts me up, and I wrap my legs around him. I am desperate for him. He kicks open the door of his bedroom with his booted foot and carries me in, slamming it behind him as he turns and lays me down on his bed. He strips off his breeches. He throws his shirt to the floor as I open my cloak and robe, and he presses down upon me and enters me without a single word said, with only a deep sigh, as if he's been holding his breath all day for this moment. Only then do I gasp against his naked shoulder. Thomas, swive me all night. I don't want to think. He rears above me so that he can see my pale face and my auburn hair spilling over the pillow. Christ, I'm desperate for you, he exclaims. And then his face grows intent, and his dark eyes widen and are blinded with desire as he starts to move inside me. I open my legs wider and hear my breath coming short. And I know that I am with the only...